Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. If you have ever been a jerk on the job, and if you've acknowledged that or apologized for it or even felt bad about it, well, you're off the hook. This show is about the career cretins, the unrepentant jerks who don't even realize we're talking about them right now, the arrogant ones, the manipulative ones, the men and women who make life at work misery.
We have sort of a problem here. Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great. And I'll go ahead and make sure you get another copy of that memo. Okay?
I have the memo. I've got it. It's right.
Hello, Phil.
This hour, an exploration of the office jerk and why it is that he or she always seems to get ahead. Does any of this sound familiar to you? Is there a jerk on the loose in your workplace? Or are you perhaps the jerk on the loose in your workplace? Why would that be? Have you found that leaving the niceties at the door is the fastest way to the top? We'd like to hear your stories at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. In this hour, we'll be speaking with a number of people who know jerks perhaps better than they would like to. We're going to start with Gloria Elliott. She's a senior consultant at Elliott & Associates, joining us on the line from Roanoke, Virginia. And Gloria, I understand that you offer something called jerk training, and it's one of your most popular courses.
Good morning, Dick, and I'm afraid it's the most popular course.
You're not training people to be jerks, I hope.
And the first question is always, are we? And no, and the reality is, if you try to behave, to use the same weapons that these folks use, you're going to lose. They wrote the rules. They're comfortable and justified in what they are doing, in their behavior, in their attitudes. And it doesn't work for those of us who want to be nice people, who want to play nice in the sandbox that we call work.
Now, in this sandbox, you've created some categories, ways of understanding who the jerks in the office are. Can you just sort of tick down the list of the top three or four that you identify as jerks in the office?
The categories that I use were borrowed and adapted from a man who wrote a book called Coping with Difficult People. His name is Richard Branson. There are many, many descriptive titles. Your opening described just about everything without profanity. When we think about jerks, we first think about the Sherman tanks, the bulldozers, the know-it-all, the arrogance. We think about the exploders, the people who have childish hissy fits. But actually, some of the most difficult ones for us to deal with are the passive-aggressives, the negativists, the people who believe that it's their job to deflate any balloon that you ever bring to work, or the clam, the person who attends all meetings, all team building, all resolution discussions with silence, who plays John Wayne and goes yep and nope, or the snipers. That short that you played, that passive-aggressive, oily, snaky, sneaky guy where only when he's gone do you know that there are all kinds of weapons in your tailbone, that you have been stabbed, you have been mutilated, that you took the bait again, that you got it. You knew you were being mugged. You knew you were suffering verbal violence. But they're so good at it, only as you're driving home do you come up with your brilliant answers, your responses.
And so is the point of the exercise, Gloria, to give people defense mechanisms or to teach them how to confront these people?
First step is to have a plan, any plan that stops you from repeating mindless behavior. And I'll credit a woman named Suzette Elgin for talking about the gentle art of verbal self-defense. First, you want to shut up. Second, you want to think. Third, you want to say, what's going on here? Four, you have to decide if you want to take the hook. You can play the game with these people and suffer poor work-related mental health for the rest of your life. Fifth, you can decide, I am not going to take the bait. I am going to, and this is your purpose, deal with this person with as much honor and integrity as I possibly can. I am not going to make this personal. I'm going to find a way to work with them without giving up for the rest of the day my emotional and mental health. if you can cope with some sense of balance, because you're not going to change them or fix them, you always have the choice of doing what most of us would like to do, which is assertively leveling with the folks and saying, here's some behaviors, here's some dynamics, they don't work for me.
Gloria, I'm going to stop you there and thank you for being with us on the program today. I appreciate your categories. I know that people are listening going, got that one.
It's been an honor. Thank you.
Gloria Elliott is a senior consultant at Elliott and Associates. Now, let me introduce you to my other guest for the hour. Laura Lee Keishley is joining us. She is a social psychologist and associate professor of urban and labor studies at Wayne State University, and she's in the studios of WJR in Detroit, Michigan. Laura Lee, thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Dick. Thanks for having me.
Robert Sutton is also with us from the studios at Stanford University. He's a professor of management science and engineering in the Stanford Engineering School, where he is co-director of the Center for Work Technology and Organization. Bob, nice of you to come in.
It's great to be here.
I understand you had your own sort of eye-opening experience with jerks in the workplace that came from a short essay you wrote for the Harvard Business Review. What happened?
Well, I wrote this, what I thought was just a short little essay in which I argued, using some language that you won't use on the radio apparently, that organizations that I'd worked with that were actually good at keeping jerks out, I actually dispute the notion that they're inevitable, tended to have no jerk, or there's another word that they would use, which we're not going to use, and they would try to avoid it at hiring. And even more importantly, when people would display hostility or would put people down, especially those who had less power, it would be something that other people in the organization simply wouldn't allow them to get away with. So it became an organizational or cultural norm. And in fact, I think your premise that inevitably you get ahead by being a jerk, there's a lot of evidence that some of our most effective organizations in the United States simply don't allow that. Everything from Procter & Gamble to SAS Institute, a whole bunch of other organizations I've ever worked with. There are organizations where being a jerk does help you get ahead, but there's a lot that simply don't allow it.
And Laura Lee, you spend a lot of your time studying jerks in the workplace. Who are these people? And I mean, we know that everybody has to earn a living, but do they actually come in saying, I'm going to make life miserable for other people today, all this week, and for the rest of my life?
I think there's a lot of variability in the folks who do this. I mean, Gloria talked about different types, and one of the popular conceptions is that these are fundamentally distorted folks who get their kicks out of doing this, and I think that's true with some of them. I think there are other ones where what you're probably seeing is someone who is in a position where they're socially and supervisor skills are they're not competent to be doing that. And so they're very clumsy in how they interact with people. They have different kinds of motives for the kinds of things they do. And then you have people who really are reacting to, as Bob so nicely put it, very strong norms within the organization that essentially says if you want to move ahead, then you have to do these kinds of things. So there's a variety of different types, but certainly there are some, as you suggested, Dick, who are very clear that that's what they want to do. That's how they figure the world works.
Well, the bulldozers, the Sherman tanks that Gloria was talking about, I mean, I can see why someone who inhabits that kind of personality just tramples all over everyone else at their own level in the office. And if they're able to present anything that's even halfway acceptable to the boss who might be promoting them, they'd be the natural choice. Because in many cases, and from both of you here, Barbara, Laura Lee, in many cases, those are attributes of leadership.
Mm. Well, I think they're attributes of bad leadership, but sometimes we mistake them for being attributes of leadership. And there is some research that when people are interpersonally cruel, we give them extra IQ points. But I would go back to the notion that that's a broken culture, and there's lots of places where such behavior simply isn't acceptable. The more interesting case, actually, is the research on what happens when you put people in power. And following Laura Lee's comment, very often when people are put in power, they simply become insensitive to what is going on around them. And that's one of the biggest problems is you have this perfectly normal person, you give them a lot of power, and they start becoming detached and insensitive to the needs of people around them. A finding that's been replicated over and over again, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think it's important to give consideration to why these folks may do what they do, because it suggests different ways in which you might want to intervene or manage the situation. So when Bob was talking about the case of people moving into positions of power and becoming insensitive, that suggests a different kind of management strategy, part of it educating them, mentoring them, feedback training, that type of thing. And if you're talking about someone, though, who fundamentally is not able to recognize that other people matter, or that requires a whole different kind of intervention or strategy.
1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us. Catherine's on the line from Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
You're not a jerk at the workplace, are you?
Yes, I am. I want to stick up for the jerks.
Okay.
Or at least make a case for them, because I've been in administrative positions, and it's always been a struggle with what do you do when people who are working for you are slackers, are not as committed to the job, don't get the job done, and then, you know, the responsibility falls on you. And then if how do you correct people, you know, mm-hmm. who aren't doing the job? And I think mm-hmm. the reason jerks get promoted is that they're committed to the job, they have high expectations of themselves, and then maybe of the people who work under them. So the people who work under them are held to a high expectation.
But, Catherine, if you come to someone and say, look, you're really going to have to get here on time. You've been coming in half an hour and a half late for the past 2 weeks, and they say, what a jerk. That doesn't necessarily make you a jerk, does it?
Well, I don't think so. But, you know, I've been called a jerk or words to that effect. I've been told that I've been overbearing and stuff. And my view is that I'm just trying to get them to do their job, because if they do their job, then they look good, the department looks good, and we succeed. But if they don't, you know, I mean, they're very important people to the organization, more important than the managers, really. And so they've got to do the job. And, you know, if I'm
wondering, listening to you, Catherine, whether or not we need to sort of fine-tune our definition of jerk. Laura Lee, what do you think?
Well, I mean, part of the question I would have for you, Catherine, is do you find that you have a lot of those difficulties with employees, or is it just some employees?
Well, I think it's more and more, and I think that our younger workforce is more entitled than increasingly more entitled as they come along.
Or feels it's more entitled, right?
Well, I think that our whole society spoils our children, and we have such wealth and such opportunity here that people kind of feel it's owed to them in a way without having to really work hard. And I found that to be true.
Where were you going with this, Laura Lee?
Actually, Catherine, let me come at it in a different way. I'd like you to think of a situation that you have had with someone where you might have thought that, or they called you a jerk or something. Can you tell us what happened there very briefly, the kinds of things that you did in dealing with them?
You know what I want you to do, Catherine? Hang on to that. That's a great instruction from Laura Lee. We have to take a break for just a couple of moments. We're going to come back. You'll have that story ready to tell us, and we'll continue our conversation about the jerk at the office, defining it, understanding it, living with it, learning from it. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join this conversation. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. We're talking this hour about jerks at the workplace. With me as guests on the program, Laura Lee Keesley, social psychologist and associate professor of urban and labor studies at Wayne State University, and Robert Sutton, who's a professor of management science and engineering in the Stanford Engineering School. And Catherine's on the line from Durham, North Carolina. And while we're not going to conduct an hour-long seminar in remedial jerkology, I think that it's probably useful to take this exchange one step further. Laura Lee, you had a question for Catherine. I wonder if you can just repeat that here.
Sure. My question, Catherine, was for you to relate very briefly an example of a situation you've had with an employee where, you know, you thought that they thought you were a jerk or whatever. Tell us what they did, but more specifically, tell us what you did.
Well, I've had a situation very similar to your opening scene with the person, the jerk, so-called, saying that the report wasn't complete. And I've had that experience pretty routine, not routinely, but often enough. And so then I would say the same thing, you know, it's not complete, it needs to be completed. And and the person would say, all right, I'll do it, and then that would be the end of it. I wouldn't, certainly wouldn't belittle anybody. Okay. But then if they would say they would do it and it still didn't get done and they missed the deadline, then, you know, I'd sit down again with them. And then I would see them kind of freeze up and, because I'm still asking them for this report and pointing out, you know, how it's been a difficulty for the department if it doesn't get done and stuff like that. And, you know, I try, I always said, if there's anything I can do to help get this done, I'd be more than happy to do it. You know, I'd put aside my job to help that person get their report done.
Let's hear from Laura Lee on this one. Laura Lee.
I mean, what you're describing is that you're being specific and direct. You're not falling into the trap of casting aspersions against their character. And then, in fact, you're trying to point out to them the significance of that. So it strikes me from what you're saying, you're giving them constructive negative feedback, of course, because they haven't done something that they need to do. And people do, regardless of how constructive you are, negative feedback does make people feel defensive. But it strikes me from what you've told us that you are being constructive. You're not being destructive in your criticism. You're not calling them down. You're not, you know, undermining their sense of their competencies. You're, in fact, if as we continue through what you just said, you're actually assuming that they are competent to do the job. They might just need some additional help.
Catherine, thank you very much for your call. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Is there a jerk on the loose in your workplace, or are you the jerk on the loose in the workplace?
What is the single most important thing for a company? Is it the building? Is it the stock? Is it the turnover? It's the people. Investment in people. Yeah? My proudest moment here wasn't when I increased profit by 17% or cut expenditure without losing a single member of staff. It was a young Greek guy, first job in the country, hardly spoke a word of English, but he came to me and he went, "Mr. Brent, will you be the godfather to my child?" So, didn't happen in the end. We had to let him go. He was rubbish. He was rubbish.
Scene from the BBC comedy The Office with the boss explaining his management priorities. I'd like to invite one other guest into the conversation. Mike Reinvent's been listening along. He's a partner and member of the management committee at Perkins Coie. It's an international law firm headquartered in Seattle, and he's joining us on the line from his office there. Mike, your company has faced this square on, am I right? How to deal with jerks at the workplace?
Good morning. Yes, yes, we have, and we face the issue consistently in our hiring and recruiting process.
Now, does that mean that Perkins Coie is actually a bunch of former hippie labor lawyers in some kind of boutique practice who also ban caffeine?
No, it doesn't. We're a large firm with 14 offices around the world, about 550 lawyers, and we have a historical practice going back to the early 1900s. Corporate practice, business practice, but our philosophy is a lot of our business is the attraction and retention of talent, and organizations are fragile, and you've really got to carefully monitor who you invite to be your colleague.
So how do you manage a no-jerk policy? Does it start in the job interview?
It does. It starts with the job interview. It starts with looking at someone's background, how many jobs they've had, what their explanation is for, you know, if they've moved around a lot, why is that? And then you develop sort of a chemistry test as you go along.
Now, I have to tell you, Mike, if I was good at being a jerk, I figure I could get through that job interview no problem at all.
You might be able to, particularly if, as one of your earlier participants mentioned, the passive aggressive and the quiet sneaky ones are the hardest to ferret out. But lawyers, particularly when we're talking to lateral partners, meaning partners who've practiced for a number of years other places, have a track record, and you can check with opposing counsel, clients, and we do a fair bit of due diligence, and a fair bit of that due diligence is dedicated to making sure that that we hire people and we work with people who represent us professionally to courts, clients, and the outside world. And it's just critical. So we spend a fair bit of time on that.
Bob Sutton, this is the kind of no-jerks philosophy you were talking about earlier in the program.
Yeah, yes. And the other thing that we're talking about here is it's not just at Perkins Coie that they hire people like this, mm-hmm. that when lawyers lose it, and lawyers have high-pressure jobs and are actually hired to be – everybody wants their lawyer to be a jerk to other people but not to them. So there's a little problem with lawyers. Yeah. And my wife's managing partner of a law firm. I know about lawyers. But but the other thing that's going on here is that when people lose it, because we all lose our tempers, we all are in difficult, high-pressure situation, the question is, what does the culture do? Do you let the person get away with it? Do you promote them, or do you gently stop them and say, we don't act like that around here? And my understanding about this firm is that they don't just say, we're not going to bring in jerks, that they gently coach people when they lose it, and it's understood that although we all lose our temper sometimes, it's not something we're supposed to do around here, and it's conveyed to people.
What happens, Mike, if somebody shouts at an intern or wings their BlackBerry out a window at Perkins Coie? How do you guys deal with that?
Well, we initially confront it and figure out what's going on and why. The first message is that kind of behavior is just not tolerated. We do need to zealously represent our clients, but internal misconduct like that, we just don't put up with. So we'll sit down and talk to the lawyer or it could be a staff person too. And if you don't have respect for each other in the organization, organizations are fragile. And if you don't have that respect and you don't weed out and address that kind of what I view as not just a temper tantrum but misconduct, you're eating away at the very fabric of your company or your law firm or your business.
And I guess part of it, Mike, is making sure that anybody who joins the company knows those are the rules on day one.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah, we have had lateral candidates who we've had a mutual agreement not to proceed when we've talked through some of these issues.
Laura Lee Keesley, I just wonder, in as I'm listening to Mike describe that, there's an obvious difference between, you know, what we would agree is a form of abuse where you've got someone who literally is making life unbearable for mm-hmm. people in the office, and that you can mm-hmm. address on the level of abuse. And then there's all that gray area that kind of beneath that threshold, which is just bad behavior. And that's the tough stuff to get at, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. But people recognize it. So the challenging part, I mean, if it's a clearly abusive pattern, then other people will see it. And if other people see it and the organization doesn't tolerate that kind of behavior, then they'll go after it. The more subtle, less overt, which, by the way, tends to be the most frequent from our research, is harder to get a handle on. And so people often in the early stages of that experience are often questioning themselves, saying, is it me? Is this person just having a bad day? For example, we heard talk of, you know, people in high-stress jobs might do something like that. Well, that's an interesting assumption to make, but there are many people who are in high-stress jobs who don't do those behaviors. So we have to really disconnect for people that connection between, if you're in a high-stress job, therefore you do those things. And that's what Mike's firm is saying. Yeah, you're in a high-stress job, but you still don't do those things.
Mike, quick last question for you. Does that mean there are no jerks at Perkins Coie, or they're just fewer than at other companies?
Yeah, I wish it was none, but it isn't. There's probably relatively fewer, but there are certainly situations that we continue to work through, and no, it's not like this is a pristine environment. The main difference is probably it's an articulated value of respect, of mutual respect, that comes from the top. So people know that and think about, particularly if they want to get ahead, they think about how their actions and interactions with other people will be perceived. That's the big difference, I think.
Thanks for your time, Mike.
You bet. Thank you.
Mike Reinban is partner and member of the management committee at Perkins Coie. That's a Seattle-based international law firm with a no-jerks hiring policy. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, next to Louisville, Kentucky. And Amanda's joining us. Hi, Amanda.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. Are you calling to confess jerkdom or victimhood here?
Well, no, I don't want to confess my jerkdom. I would rather talk about someone else's.
But this has been quite a few years ago, my situation was, and so I can look back on it now and chuckle a little bit. But I was once on a very, very competitive sales force at a broadcast company, and it was commissioned. And I was the second woman on the force, and the other woman who had preceded me in time really targeted me to the point of, if I won a contest, you would come in and sit in my office and tell me why I shouldn't have been awarded it. It was just amazing the things that she would do and that people would repeat back to me. Unfortunately, she would often engage me, and she could get me going, and I would end up behaving just as badly as she did. And that's when I started really getting worried. Maybe it was my awakening point, but at the same time, it was my point when I started worrying about what I was becoming, because I just got drawn into it.
And you didn't like what you were becoming?
Exactly, which is really the reason why I ended up leaving the company.
What's interesting, Amanda, stay with me on the line for half a second here. I want to bring my guests back in, is that I think there's kind of an assumption that the jerk is more likely to be a guy than a woman. What you're describing is a woman demonstrating this behavior. Laura Lee, first to you, is that mm-hmm. uncommon at the workplace?
About women doing that?
Yeah.
No. I mean, our research has found men and women are equally likely to do to be jerks. They may do it in somewhat different ways, but they are equally likely to be jerks.
And yeah. Bob?
The interesting thing about this example that Amanda gives is mm-hmm. it's sort of a warning that when yes. you go to join a workplace and you look at the people, if you don't like the people who are there, watch it, because you will become like them.
Mm.
And there's this assumption that people have that I will go change the workplace. But everything we know about the contagion of everything human beings do is, it sounds like Amanda learned what would happen and decided to leave. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. Organizations go and work settings go on like this for a long period of time. Yes. So, Amanda, you did the right thing, because mm-hmm. it's how one person can change an organization of hundreds of people is very different, is very difficult. In contrast, following even your last conversation, there's lots of organizations that are very careful to hire and fire people on attitude. Mm-hmm. Southwest Airlines mm-hmm. is one. Men's Warehouse is another one.
What does Southwest Airlines say to sort of distinguish itself? It's a big corporation. How do they weed them out?
Well, you may know that literally thousands of people applied to every 10 openings, thousands of people applied to at Southwest Airlines. They tell them we're going to hire and fire an attitude. And then if they behave improperly or show impatience, then they weed them out in the early part of their employment history. So they're pretty aggressive about it.
Amanda, let me just, if I can, Bob, go back to Amanda in Louisville. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering whether or not when you pick places to work now, Amanda, you use what you learned at that on that sales force mm-hmm. as a way of saying, no, I don't want to be here.
Well, I became an entrepreneur, if that tells you anything. That I could control, and yes, I guess I can say that after that point, I did learn some good lessons with that.
Yeah. All right, thanks for
May
your call.
May I ask Amanda a question?
Oh, Amanda, stay with me.
Just very quickly.
Go ahead.
Amanda, when this was happening to you, did you tell anybody in the organization about it?
Yes, repeatedly. I tried not to
okay.
because I was afraid it would look like a cat fight.
Mm-hmm.
Within the organization, I was very sensitive
right.
about that. It was
yes.
an organization where there weren't that many women
yes.
Doing that well, and
yeah.
I really, really tried not to. Every
okay.
once in a while, I would lose my temper and go in and just have a little fit. But it was, you know, it was like I, and that's what made me uncomfortable. I didn't like the way I became.
Right.
That was precisely what was bothering me, because I did not like the fact that someone had that much control over me that it turned me
right.
into a bad-tempered yeah. person in cases like that.
Mm-hmm. The reason I asked that question,
some of it was part of self-protection, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. The reason I asked that question is because our research indicates that by far the majority of people don't tell anybody in the organization, and there's often very good reasons for that. Amanda, you just gave one, which is how am I going to be characterized in this process? And in fact, some organizations who don't fully recognize the impact of these kinds of behaviors will tend to push the responsibility back to the target and put it as a personality conflict, or it's just a cat fight, or it's something like that, or that there will be retaliation if you say anything. So an organization can, in fact, keep itself blind and deaf by, you know, making it difficult for people to say things.
Amanda, I want to thank you for your call. I'm going next
yes,
to
you.
Durham, North Carolina, and Dylan's joining us. Hi, Dylan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Thank you. My question is, what do you do if the fella that is a jerk in your company is the yes man and for the boss, feeds his ego and is by the main boss, you know, most of the time? And what do you do in a situation like that? Whenever I've had a legitimate grievance or gripe about something, I'm then looked at as being the jerk, especially if I disagree with this other person.
You can't get past this boss's guard, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, how do you put the spotlight on the jerk himself so the boss understands that what I'm trying to say is legitimate and I'm not just trying to be the jerk?
Bob Sutton, I wonder if this goes back to, you know, whether or not the culture of the company allows people to have that kind of sense of freedom.
Well, part of it is whether or not the culture allows it. But this, Dylan actually has sort of an interesting case because it's a classic bind that happens with, actually, this even sounds like the classic authoritarian personality, the person who, excuse my language, but brown noses the boss, but then dumps all over the people beneath them who are less powerful. And people like that are very difficult to get around because the boss will think they're the most wonderful, gentle person on earth. And then you end up being in a trap where you're constantly abused, often when the boss isn't around. Is that consistent with your experience, Dylan, or am I reading too much into this situation?
No, that's absolutely. That's real close to home, you know, and the fact of the matter is I would love to leave. I just simply can't at this point, but I'm also on the different spectrum. I work in the construction industry, so I'm not actually in an office. You know, I'm out in the field, but I do go to the office.
You get to escape is part of what you're saying here. Just a quick word from you, Bob, because we have to take a break.
Yeah, you know, my only advice in this case is that's where building a little coalition of other people who've experienced the same sort of problems is at least the beginning of the answer.
Okay, Dylan, the beginning of the answer for you there. 1-800-423-8255. Oh, who doesn't deal with jerks at the office? Strategies, ideas, advice, information. Just the notion that other people are suffering the same problems that you are. Join our conversation. We're at 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
One thing, Gareth, when you're on the phone, could you keep the pig impersonations down to a minimum?
Yeah, here we go. I've told you before, you can't tell me what to do. I'm team leader.
Well, actually, Gareth, I'm senior sales rep, so yes, I can.
Team leader beats senior sales rep?
No, it doesn't. My job title actually means something, Gareth, yeah? Got a pay rise, I'm on a new scale. Team leader doesn't mean anything, mate.
Excuse me, it means I'm leader of a team.
No, it doesn't. It's a title someone's given you to get you to do something they don't want to do for free, right?
1-800-423-8255. Jerks at work, your experience, your understanding of what's going on there. Straight to Nashville, Tennessee. Peter's joining us on the line. Hi, Peter.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
I wanted to say that I have maybe a unique spin on this. I have made a delightful career being happily overpaid for being the kinder and gentler face, if you will, for a department in which you have someone who, by my definition, is a classic jerk.
You're the buffer person, then.
Yeah.
The cooler.
You have a situation in many companies. I heard earlier that you're talking about the law firm that was trying to have kinder, gentler people. If there's a lawyer in the firm who's a jerk, but he wins 90% of the cases, he's going to stay. And you're going to have the result is the company is going to say, you've got to work with this person, or we've got to find someone who can liaise with the rest of the company and still keep this person because he's that good.
Peter, are you overpaid because they know how valuable you are?
That is simply, in my last position, according to the compensation committee, I was being paid 30% more than they thought the position was worth because I was willing to stay and work with the person and was able to do so. It wasn't, you know, a high blood pressure, I'm going to die here situation. But I found the way to deal with it. And strangely enough, that's been almost my career even since my college, you know, part-time job.
Okay, shorthand, what is it that you do? Are you a translator or how do you see the role that you play?
Well, I think I expressed it. as the kinder and gentler face. Mm-hmm. The last position I was in, our department was 10 out of 10 in customer service, and yet the last 3 years I was there, it was rated as 2 out of 10, and everyone, including the CEO, who really knew that the person I worked for really knew her stuff, and where the company was not going to get rid of this person, had the kind of tunnel vision that has no social skills but really knows what her job. Even the CEO would come to me first to get information from her, unless, you know, it was an emergency and he needed her or it was right down. But people would come and talk to me first.
Peter, just stay with me on the line here. I want to bring Bob Sutton in because, Bob, in some of your other writing, you have noted that for companies to succeed and to innovate, sometimes it's important to have unpopular people who aren't necessarily like others in the firm. Is this a situation that Peter's describing that would fit that?
What Peter, and maybe you can jump in here, what Peter, it sounds like this person was not necessarily always mean, but this person sort of lacked the social skills to translate what needed to be said. It wasn't so much meanness as insensitivity and lack of social skills, and you were the social person who provided the connection. Is that fair or not?
Well, I guess I'm thinking of four people I've worked for in my career. That would be true of three of them. One was actually mean.
Well, holding the mean person aside, I teach in the Stanford Engineering School, and there's an expression we have in Silicon Valley, which is sometimes the best engineers come in bodies that can't talk. And and sometimes engineers like that need people who are smoother socially to translate. Mm-hmm. So that's why Steve Wozniak needed Steve Jobs, because he needed somebody who could talk and to translate. But that's a little different than a jerk, because the thing that I dispute, and I would even go back on this, that when you start believing that somebody who wins 90% of their cases but psychologically abuses and destroys the workplace is the kind of person you could keep, in many ways that's my best single test of a broken culture, is when somebody is flaming, destroying, belittling, and demeaning everybody around them, but they're so valuable to us that we have to keep them. And if you look at cases, even General Electric has a history of firing people like that, and so does Men's Warehouse, because they just decide in the end that those people are too destructive for the culture. So I think that's a lie that managers often tell themselves to allow jerks to stay on because they're too afraid to get rid of them because they're so profitable.
Unfortunately, a couple of the jerks I worked for owned the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's another issue.
Laura Lee, did you want to jump in here?
Well, I thought what was interesting in Peter's, your example, is it reminds me of a lot of the conversations we've had with people in a variety of organizations. The amount of energy that an organization will put into buffering, managing these kinds of characters that they keep on. And it's over the long term then that they start to realize, just how much it's costing the company. Part of it is because you have a lot of very creative and energetic people whose energy is being directed to managing this particular individual. And at some point, that becomes very clear that if that energy was directed elsewhere, that the company would be probably more productive and a more respectful place to work.
Which, Peter, puts you in the weird position of having to say, yes, he's a problem, but it's okay, I can handle it. Because otherwise, your own job's in jeopardy.
Peter, you're not overpaid, by the way. You have a rare set of
skills.
Yeah,
that's right. I agree.
All right, Peter, thanks for calling. Next to Iola, who's on the line from Aiken, South Carolina. Hi, Iola. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I was just calling today because I am a jerk, and I'm trying to reform myself. And how it has happened, that's what the lady was. She'd asked me when I called in, as one of my coworkers who works under me actually stood up to me and called me on being a jerk, and I didn't want to be that way, and I had no idea I was coming off like that, and she stood up to me and told me how I was acting and the ramifications of that, and she's now one of my most valuable people, and I've got her in my back pocket all the time now, and she's basically teaching me people skills.
What did she say to you, Iola? What was the one thing she said to you that made your eyebrows go up?
I'm a firefighter. I'm a wildland firefighter for the Forest Service. And we were doing an Indian run, which is we're running in a line, and the last person at the end of the line is supposed to run really fast, sprint to the front, and I was in the middle, and I was in a bad, really bad mood, and I started saying some things that weren't very nice, and I said, because the person in the back wasn't running to the front, I said, come on, whoever's in the back needs to run to the front, and of course, I said it with a little bit more passion and a little bit more expletive, and she, later on, she talked to me, and she said, I don't appreciate being talked to like that. You can't talk to me like that. And
I bet that took a lot of courage for her to do that, Iola.
Yeah, it did, because I'm the work leader there, and I know how much she really values that position, and it really did. It took a lot for her to say that, and when the thing was too is I didn't have very many friends, or people didn't really like me very much, and I didn't really understand why. And when she told me that, it became kind of clear. I was like, oh, wow, maybe, you know, maybe there is something I can do here. You know, maybe I'm putting on a tough act and I don't need to be, you know, because this, you know, firefighter thing, it's kind of tough for women.
Yeah,
sometimes, you know, the women in fire, they think they've got to be tough just to make it. Sometimes you really do.
Laura Lee, that means there is a way out of this forest after all?
Yeah, nice metaphor. Yeah, I mean, Iola, I think what's really powerful is the fact that you were even open to that, and then reflecting on why you may have felt that you needed to behave the way you did, and for someone else to come up and say that. And probably in your case, you're more of an example of someone who just wasn't clear about how your behavior impacted other people and were responding to possibly, as Bob's talked about, some assumed norms in the culture that said that you had to be this kind of person.
Although, Bob, would I be going too far on this to suggest that maybe the man would have a harder time listening to that underling than Iola did?
No, I'm with Laura Lee on this, that I don't think there's that much difference between men and women in this regard. And, in fact, the research shows there's remarkably little difference. The roles are very powerful. But the thing that Iola, is that your name?
Yeah.
Shows us is, to me, and there's growing literature on this, the difference between a wise and a smart leader is a smart leader says all sorts of smart things, and a wise one can actually listen and learn. And it sounds, and men can do this too, although women might be a little better at it. But it sounds like that's what happened in this case, was somebody actually stopped talking and listened. And it's very hard to take dissent or criticism from somebody, especially when they're less powerful than you. But that's what great leaders actually tend to do.
All right, Iola, thanks a lot for your call. Next to Boston, Massachusetts, now Janet's with us. Hi, Janet.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good. I just called to say I was an office manager for several years, and I was always amazed that the jerks didn't realize how much an administrative staff could mess up their lives by losing their payroll, misfiling their mail, writing down the wrong telephone numbers, not setting up appointments correctly. And it's very easy to retrain them once you start doing that to them. It actually gets to be fun. I always figured, why should I let them torture me? Let's have a little fun here.
Did it work, though? Did it correct their behavior?
Unbelievable. I've even retrained some people that way and spoke to their bosses and said, you know, if they act like this, when they go to clients, the secretary is the person who's going to make appointments for them. If they're like this, they're not going to get the appointment. They've got to realize this, you know? So the administrative staff can really make or break the situation a lot of times.
This is like a sort of a sneak and run around the jerks here, if we sort of turn around what Gloria was talking about at the beginning of the program.
Right. It actually, it really puts the onus back on them to try to be nice, you know?
Yeah. Laura Lee?
I mean, what's interesting about that for me is it points out that when these kinds of behaviors, these kinds of jerks get and do their stuff and keep doing it, then people start to respond in somewhat hostile ways. And while it worked, and I agree with you, Janice, it seems to work, and it also had a way of indicating to him, them, that you had power of your own and that they needed to treat you better in that respect. If things were different, my bet is you wouldn't want to have had responded that way. You would have wished
nasty to them. We were very nice to them.
We call that passive aggression.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah.
I think she's all over us on this one.
And my bet is if the situation, you would have preferred to not have to do that.
Right.
But you did because
stressed out by them, and we decided to have fun instead.
Right.
Instead of them ruining our day, we had a few laughs.
Bob Sutton, it just shows that people will adapt in different circumstances.
Well, yeah, but I do like this because it does show the roots of people who have less rather than more power, because sometimes this is just done as revenge so people can laugh among themselves and have a common enemy. But I like this case because you actually used it to retrain people who thought they had more power than they actually did. And in fact, that's a general rule, too, about management and leadership is and we actually have evidence that people in positions of power often delude themselves about how much influence they have and also how much they're admired. And it's not so bad to bring them down a notch, especially when they deserve it.
So you can do something like a jerk audit of a company if somebody's listening and going, boy, we should really clean up things around here.
Well, I don't know whether such a thing exists, but the American Lawyer, interestingly enough, commented on my Harvard Business Review article and proposed that law firms do jerk audits. I don't know what that would look like, but maybe some of your other guests would know.
Laura Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, there are. I mean, they get called various kinds of things. And one of the things to make clear here is that jerks aren't just in the United States. They're all over the place. And so there's been a lot of work done in Europe and Britain and Australia where they do hostile workplace audits. And part of it is for people to, in organizations, to be monitoring the attitudes and the morale of their employees and tracking that on a fairly regular basis. And also keeping track of things like informal consultations that people have with, like, where they're getting advice about how to deal with somebody without having to reveal confidentiality. But if you track that information and bring it all together, you're going to be able to detect whether you've got some kind of pattern going on in a particular unit or whether there's been a shift over time.
I learned tons about this that I didn't know at the beginning of the hour. Laura Lee, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Laura Lee Keishley is an associate professor of urban and labor studies at Wayne State University. And Bob Sutton, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Bob is professor of management science and engineering in the Stanford Engineering School. We talked a little bit earlier with Mike Reinban, a partner at Perkins Coie, and also with Gloria Elliott, senior consultant at Elliott and Associates. Special thanks to the folks at WJR in Detroit and at Stanford University for technical assistance with today's program. We routinely get help here at The Connection from Kim Bichari, Dara Manoogian, Brian Myers, and Carl Volker, helping us get the program on the air. We're produced by Anne-Marie Dorning, Catherine Fenelosa, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugertz. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I ain't never whipping no soul, sucker, jerk, I'm gonna take it.